Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 964, Lies, Damned Lies, and Statistics. This is being recorded on June 27th of the year 2017. The title of the program comes from a famed quote by Mark Twain, who noted that there were three basic kinds of lying: lies, damned lies, and statistics. And we're going to have all three in this program. The vast bulk of what we're going to be talking about relates to the high-profile hacks allegedly performed by Russia. But in light of the fact that not only does the CIA have hacking software that is designed to mimic Russian, among other countries' characteristics of a cyber attack, but many of the NSA's hacking tools have been available on the web courtesy of WikiLeaks and also the shadow brokers, although I think the shadow brokers may have taken theirs off. But in any event, that certainly complicates things. What we're going to be looking at in this program is primarily information about the high-profile hacks. If we have time, we're going to take a look at a very important article that was written by Seymour Hersh, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who broke the My Lie story about Vietnam decades ago. Now, Seymour Hersh, when reporting about shenanigans vis-a-vis the military and intelligence community, has to go abroad. He wrote an article for the London Review of Books and has a very important article about the non-chemical weapons attack that wasn't perpetrated by Syria. And sadly, he had to go to Germany to get that article published, and it does not appear to have affected things in this country. If time permits, we will talk about that. We're going to review the information about the CIA's hacking tools being designed to mimic a Russian cyber attack. We're going to take a look at the alleged hacking by Russia of voter databases and machines in 39 states, something that Kay Stinson, the chief spokesperson for the consortium of secretaries of state, said basically she had no idea what they were talking about. She also opined that cybersecurity firms have a lot to do with skewing and hyping up the Russian scare. Even the Department of Homeland Security noted that scanning appeared to be much of the activity that had gone on. Scanning is routinely done by hackers in order to find a vulnerable server, and that information is available on the dark web. We're going to take a look at an article from The Intercept in which a former NSA hacking specialist named Jake Williams observed the hacking of the voting machines, saying basically any mid-level hacker could have pulled this off. That obviously would not be limited to Russia. It is also worth noting that Barack Obama has placed some cyber weapon bombs on Russian computer systems, something that could lead to a third world war, something that could certainly lead to a cyber third world war. And it was alleged that Obama got information, certainly the information in this Washington Post story alleges that Vladimir Putin personally ordered the, quote, hacks, unquote, into various American systems, the DNC server, John Podesta's emails, the voting machines, etc. This despite the fact that the NSA itself was very skeptical of the information. One of the points to note, and we will come back to this, is that for Vladimir Putin to have done this, even after he got a cyber red phone call from Obama, he basically would have had to have been insane and hell-bent for leather to destroy Russia. It would certainly have poisoned any opportunity for better relations with the U.S., even under a President Trump. So there is a massive contradiction in what we are being told and how we are being told it took place, because if, in fact, what Putin was supposedly trying to do was to promote better U.S.-Russian relations, then doing what he allegedly did after a red phone call from Obama would be the worst possible way to do it and would have been proof that he was insane. Several things that are worth noting about these hacks. First of all, Michael Flynn, the now-dismissed aide to Donald Trump, who was a key campaign aide, was working for and on or on the boards of a number of cybersecurity firms, including some very sophisticated ones that engage in just the type of spear phishing attacks that figure in the attempts at breaching American election computers in the U.S. We'll talk about that. It, of course, raises the question about what role those companies might have played in some of these shenanigans. Also, the cybersecurity firms that Kay Stimson said were playing up the Russian scare. What role might they have played either in hyping up the Russian scare, obviously to promote business for themselves, or perhaps even to have engineered some of that themselves? In terms of compromising voter security, it now turns out that a Republican online database operation compromised the personal and political information on 198 million American voters. That is a lot of voters, 198 million American voters had their information compromised, not by Russia, not by the GRU, not by the FSB, but by the Republican Party. That, along with Michael Flynn's role working for a number of cybersecurity firms and cyber attack firms, that I think raises some interesting questions as well. Time permitting, we're going to take a look at Seymour Hersh's article from Die Welt, indicating not only did Syria not engage in a sarin gas attack, but that actually what happened was they used a Russian-built smart weapon, and in accordance with the protocols that were in operational status between Russia and the U.S., multiple U.S. intelligence and military individuals and agencies were notified in advance of this and knew full well that what the Trump administration was saying was a bald-faced lie. We'll talk about that. And now, after a Syrian plane was shot down by a Navy Hornet flying, ironically enough, from the aircraft carrier George H.W. Bush, the protocols between Russia and the U.S. have been said to have been lessened. And now we are being told, yep, we have indications that there is going to be another sarin gas attack by the, or another chemical weapons attack by the Assad regime, and that this will result in heavy penalties. A very ominous situation indeed. If time does not permit, we'll devote either part of or an entire program to the information about the Cy Hersh debunking of the Syrian sarin gas attack and the ominous forecasting by the Trump administration of an impending Syrian gas attack. Reviewing very briefly from something we looked at in For the Record 960 from the Heavy.com blog of April 3rd of 2017. Article by Stephanie Dubé or Dubé Wilson, D-W-I-L-S-O-N. WikiLeaks Vault 7 Part 3 reveals CIA tool might mask hacks as Russian, Chinese, or Arabic. And skipping down. These tools could make it more difficult for antivirus companies and forensic investigators to attribute hacks to the CIA. Could this call the source of previous hacks into question? It appears that, yes, this might be used to disguise the CIA's own hacks to appear as if they were Russian, Chinese, or from specific other countries. Skipping down. According to WikiLeaks, the tool could make it more difficult for investigators and antivirus companies to attribute viruses and other hacking tools to the CIA. Test examples weren't just in English, but also Russian, Chinese, Korean, Arabic, and Farsi. This might allow a malware creator to not only look like they were speaking in Russian or Chinese rather than in English, but to also look like they tried to hide that they were not speaking English, according to WikiLeaks. Now, the media have been all a Twitter, pun intended, with information about Russia hacking the U.S. computers and how our democracy has been under attack. Our democracy was shot dead on November 22nd, 1963, in a motorcade riding through Dealey Plaza in Dallas, Texas. And our democracy had its brains blown all over the back seat of the presidential limousine. And gunfire and other means of assassination, as well as covert operation, had determined American electoral politics for the most part ever since that time. But as Upton Sinclair once noted, it is very difficult to get someone to recognize something when keeping their job depends on their not recognizing it. I'm paraphrasing slightly. Or as political comedian Mort Saul, one of my role models, and an investigator for New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison observed, how many lies can you allow yourself to believe before you belong to the lie? And I think that certainly applies to us at this point in time. Bloomberg News, which is very big on anti-Russian reportage, carried a report in which they discussed how the hacking of American election machines by Russia was even more widespread than we have been told. I'm going to excerpt an article from the Benzinga blog, B-E-N as in Nancy, Z as in zebra, I-N-G-A. This is by, it's from June 15th of 2017 by Mark Fritz, or F-R-I-T-Z. State election officials baffled by report 39 states, quote, hit, unquote, by Russian hackers. And this is from a quote from Kay Stinson, S-T-I-N-S-O-N, who is the spokeswoman for the National Association of Secretaries of State. Quote, in response to the Bloomberg report, Kay Stinson, spokeswoman for the National Association of Secretaries of State, said the members of her group, which represents the chief election officials in 40 states, were taken aback by the allegation that 39 states were hacked. We cannot verify any information in that report, Stinson told Benzinga. It has some claims that have raised some red flags. I don't know where they're getting it. We're not able to assess to the credibility, unquote. And again, the spokeswoman for the Association of Secretaries of State said basically, we have no idea what they're talking about, which is an interesting response and left basically out of the Bloomberg report. She also noted that one of the polluting factors in the Russia did it high-profile hacks scare is the fact that cybersecurity firms have been capitalizing on the Russian scare.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Continuing with an excerpt. Ms. Stimson also noted that cybersecurity firms appeared to be ramping up the hype in order to further their own commercial agendas. She said that some cybersecurity firms were engaging in scare tactics at the state and local levels. There are cybersecurity firms making some wild claims, she said. It is a very aggressive industry. One also, I think, has to ask the question about, in addition to making wild claims, whether perhaps some of them might also have been involved in some way in some of the apparent shenanigans. I would also note that Ms. Stimson does not know exactly what the meaning of the term hit. Bloomberg attributed the number of states hit, unquote. Stimson questioned the meaning of the word to the systems in 39 states. It's hard to say how they hit, unquote, 39 states, she said. Note that the Department of Homeland Security issued a report about the Bloomberg report saying that the vast bulk of what they saw involved scanning. Now, scanning for infected or vulnerable computers is pretty much standard operating procedure. More about that in a second. Homeland Security also issued a report about the Bloomberg report saying, quote, while we are not going to get into specifics of activity at the state level, the vast majority of what we saw was scanning, not attempts to intrude, and unsuccessful attempts to steal data held in voter registration databases. And again, when a hacking attack or incident is planned, scanning for vulnerable computers is really more or less standard procedure. So that is in and of itself not only not conclusive, but really one has to ask the question, I think, so what? Reviewing quickly from the Counterpunch blog or magazine of January 13th of 2017, an article that we excerpted at length in For the Record 943 by Gregory Elich, E-L-I-C-H. Did the Russians really hack the DNC? And talking about the role of scanning in a cyber attack, command and control servers remotely issue malicious commands to infected machines. Oddly, for such a key component of the operation, the command and control IP addresses, and this is a reference to both attacks, the DNC and the Podesta attacks, in both attacks was hard-coded in the malware. This seems like another inexplicable choice, given that the point of an advanced persistent threat is to operate for an extended period without detection. A more suitable approach would be to use a domain name system or DNS address, which is a decentralized computer naming system. That would provide a more covert means of identifying the command and control server. Moreover, one would expect that address to be encrypted. Using a DNS address would also allow the command and control operation to easily move to another server if its location is detected without the need to modify and reinstall the code. One of the IP addresses is claimed to be a well-known APT28, unquote, command and control address. That is the supposed GRU, Russian military intelligence hacker here, while the second is said to be linked to Russian military intelligence. The first address points to a server located in San Jose, California, and is operated by a server hosting service. One wonders, there's a fairly well-known building, I think it's on Moore Park Avenue, from which much of the spam that arrives at people's computers all over the world originates. I wonder if that's the building they're talking about here. Pure speculation on my part. The second server is situated in Paris, France, and owned by another server hosting service. Clearly, these are servers that have been compromised by hackers. It is customary for hackers to route their attacks through vulnerable computers. That is what scanning is about, I would interject. The IP addresses of compromised hackers are widely available on the deep web, and typically a hacked server will be used by multiple threat actors. These two particular servers may or may not have been regularly utilized by Russian intelligence, but they were not uniquely so used. Almost certainly many other hackers would have used the same machines, and it cannot be said that these IP addresses uniquely identify an infiltrator. Indeed, the second IP address is associated with the common Trojan viruses Agent APPR and Shunnail, S-H-U-N-N-A-E-L. Quote, everyone is focused on attribution, but we may be missing the bigger truth, says Joshua Croman, director of the Cyber Statecraft Initiative at the Atlantic Council. The level of sophistication required to do this hack was so low that nearly anyone could do it. Unquote. They were talking about the DNC, which may not have been a hack at all, and the Podesta hack. And again, what I've talked about, excuse me, the many aspects of those hacks that are very indicative of cyber false flag operations, using the Bitly technology for the Podesta hack, which would have enabled the whole world to see what was going on, and leaving Cyrillic metadata with the email address, name of the alleged perpetrator, and the institution from which he was operating. And this is simply ludicrous. Noting here, there is a long article that will be included in its entirety in the written description for the show. Lost in that article are some of the key aspects of some of the most important details. It, for the most part, takes the hacks or the Russia hacked our elections at face value. There are, however, some valuable elements in the analysis that get eclipsed by some of the other elements of discussion. And a former NSA elite hacking team member named Jake Williams, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S, has some interesting things to say. This from The Intercept of June 5th. Of 2017, an article by Matthew Cole, Richard Esposito, Sam Biddle, and Ryan Grimm, G-R-I-M. Top secret NSA report details Russian hacking effort days before 2016 election. And talking about Jake Williams, according to Williams, if this type of attack involving spear phishing were successful, the perpetrator would possess unlimited capacity for siphoning away items of interest. Once the user opens up that email, Williams explained, the attacker has all the same capabilities that the user does. Vikram V-I-K-R-I-M Thakur, T-H-A-K-U-R, a senior research manager at Symantec's security response team, told The Intercept that in cases like this, the quantity of exfiltrated data is only limited by the controls put in place by network administrators, unquote. Data theft of this variety is typically encrypted, meaning anyone observing an infected network wouldn't be able to see what exactly was being removed, but should certainly be able to tell something was afoot. Williams added, and this is key, overall, the method is one of medium sophistication, Williams said, one that, quote, practically any hacker can pull off, unquote. In other words, the very sophisticated Machiavellian, sinister, sub rosa, emerging from the dark of night like a vampire Russian cyber weapons command wouldn't necessarily have to have had to have been involved with this nonsense at all. There is a very important and ominous article from the Washington Post talking about Barack Obama's attempts to punish Russia for Putin's election assault. What this talks about has a number of interesting things to it, as, frankly, the Washington Post would be expected to do. It basically does not examine the main contention here. It mentions that Obama had been using a special red phone that had been established to permit the heads of state of the U.S. president to communicate directly with president of Russia, in this case, obviously, Vladimir Putin, and that this had been used during the presidential campaign. This report alleges that not only did Vladimir Putin personally alter or order this attack, but it mentions that the NSA was very skeptical about the source and that a foreign intelligence service that was viewed with a jaundiced eye by key elements of U.S. intelligence confirmed the report. It does not say who that is. Was that perhaps Ukraine or Lithuania, or one of the other highly polarized elements of the old Galen gang? We don't know. The point being that the very assertion that Putin ordered this attack is questionable in terms of the sourcing that was used in the coverage. One should note that if, in fact, Obama was actually on the phone with Putin ordering that Russia stop attempting to interfere in the U.S. election and then placing cyber weapons, dormant cyber weapons on various Russian networks, which would be activated in the event of God knows what in the future, thereby creating a third world, a cyber third world war, or perhaps a real third world war, any possibility of a positive change in U.S.-Russian relations after an election would have been completely destroyed by this allegedly ongoing attempt by Putin and Russia to influence the U.S. elections. That is a fundamental contradiction here. Putin would have to have been completely insane to have done what he allegedly did. And there is no indication that Putin is completely insane. But note here that the source, which was a CIA source from deep inside the Kremlin, was viewed with some skepticism, and that a second corroborating source from an unnamed foreign intelligence service that is viewed with skepticism by elements of U.S. intel confirmed that, yep, this was Putin doing it. Whereas, in fact, for Putin to be doing what he allegedly did, which is to influence American-Russian relations in a positive direction by seeing to it that Donald Trump became president of the U.S., this would have poisoned any possibility of that happening. And what Obama did as he was exiting was to position the world for a cyber third world war, or in fact, a real third world war. Scary enough, indeed. The article from the Washington Post of June 23rd of 2017 by Greg Miller, Ellen Nakashima, and Adam Entous, E-N-T-O-U-S, I may be mispronouncing some of those names, Obama's secret struggle to punish Russia for Putin's election assault. And I'm not going to read the article in its entirety. That, like many of the other articles, is included in the written description for this program. Again, excerpting this Washington Post story. Inside was an intelligence bombshell, a report drawn from sourcing deep inside the Russian government that detailed Russian President Vladimir Putin's direct involvement in a cyber campaign to disrupt and discredit the U.S. presidential election. And again, we're told that a deep Russian government source accessed by CIA said, yep, Putin ordered this, skipping down. But it went further. The intelligence captured Putin's specific instructions on the operation's audacious objectives, defeat or at least damage the Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton, and help elect her opponent, Donald Trump. At that point, the outlines of the Russian assault on the U.S. election were increasingly apparent. Hackers with ties to Russian intelligence services had been rummaging through Democratic Party computer networks, as well as some Republican systems, for more than a year. In July, the FBI opened an investigation of contacts between Russian officials and Trump associates. And on July 22nd, nearly 20,000 emails stolen from the Democratic National Committee were dumped online by WikiLeaks. Skipping down. It took time for other parts of the intelligence community to endorse the CIA's view. Only in the administration's final weeks in office did it tell the public in a declassified report what officials had learned from Brennan in August, that Putin was working to elect Trump. Despite the intelligence the CIA had produced, other agencies were slower to endorse a conclusion that Putin was personally directing the operation and wanted to help Trump. Quote, it was definitely compelling, but it was not definitive, said one senior administration official. We needed more, unquote. Some of the most critical technical intelligence on Russia came from another country, officials said. Because of the source of the material, the NSA was reluctant to view it with high confidence. I'm skipping down again. But Obama also signed the secret finding, officials said, authorizing a new covert program involving the NSA, CIA, and U.S. Cyber Command. Skipping down. The cyber operation, about the planting of the cyber bombs, the cyber operation is still in its early stages and involves deploying implants in Russian networks deemed, quote, important to the adversary and that would cause them pain and discomfort if they were disrupted, a former U.S. official said. The implants were developed by the NSA and designed so that they could be triggered remotely as part of a retaliatory cyber strike in the face of Russian aggression, whether an attack on the power grid or interference in a future presidential race. Officials familiar with the measures said that there was concern among some in the administration that the damage caused by the implants could be difficult to contain. That is most disturbing indeed. As more here. As a result, the administration requested a legal review which concluded that the devices could be controlled well enough that their deployment would be considered proportional, unquote, in varying scenarios of Russian provocation, a requirement under international law. The operation was described as long-term, taking months to position the implants and requiring maintenance thereafter. Under the rules of covert action, Obama's signature was all that was necessary to set the operation in motion. And again, for Putin to have done what he allegedly did, he would have to have been completely insane. The article mentions that Obama had called Putin on a special phone hookup that was set up specifically so that the American president could confer with his Russian counterpart, and that this phone had been used. And for Putin to have done what he allegedly did, he basically would have to have been insane, because it would have been completely impossible for American and Russian relations to improve, regardless of whether or not Trump won the election. And it basically positioned the U.S. and Russia for a cyber Third World War, or perhaps even an altogether, an outright shooting Third World War, something that is not receiving the scrutiny it needs. And again, the notion that Russia did it with regard to the election scanning/hack, or the scanning of election machines in 39 states, or the hack of Podesta's email, or the DNC server, which may not have been a hack at all. It turns out that Michael Flynn, who was a key Trump campaign aide and was positioned as national security advisor, but then had to resign. Trump worked for a number of different cybersecurity firms, which might very well have been involved with some of this activity. However, there has been no serious discussion of, hey, might Flynn and or some of the companies for which he worked have been involved in this. It's also worth noting that a company called Westbridge Technologies, which was a subsidiary of OSY Technologies and NSO Group, founded by a couple of veterans of the Israeli Cyber Intelligence Service Unit 8200, and Flynn was working for a Luxembourg subsidiary of this, they were vying for government contracts, or looking to vie for government contracts. Now, in terms of what Kay Stinson said, she observed that cybersecurity outfits were hyping up the Russian threat. It may very well be that the actual authorship of some of this was with Flynn's associates, who were then going to use that to vie for a government contract.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
This article is from the Huffington Post of June 19th of 2017. It's by Paul Blumenthal, B-L-U-M-E-N-T-H-A-L, and Jessica Schulberg, S-C-H-U-L-B-E-R-G. Michael Flynn worked with foreign cyber weapons group that sold spyware used against political dissidents. And again, I'm not going to read the whole story, but key parts of it. The month before, Flynn joined the advisory board of OSY Technologies. By the way, OSY Technologies is based in Luxembourg and has consulted for a U.S.-based private equity firm, Francisco Partners. And NSA Group is a secretive Israel-based cyber weapons dealer that sells advanced hacking tools to governments around the world. And Israel, I would note, is among the countries that would have vested interest in hyping up a Russian threat, because getting the U.S. to mobilize its military against Assad and or against Iran and or against Russia, which is backing both the Assad regime and Iran, that would be in Israel's interest here. So the possibility of the fascist Israeli right wing, not that Israel is fascist, but its right wing sure as hell is, and Netanyahu sure as hell is. We're going to talk about Borman Jews again before too much longer. The possibility that Israeli cyber security elements or cyber intelligence elements may be involved in some of this is one to be seriously considered, because Michael Flynn worked directly with some of these Israeli-owned cyber security and cyber weapons firms. From this Huffington Post article from June 19th, the month before Flynn joined the advisory board of OSY Technologies, NSO Group opened up a new arm called Westbridge Technologies Incorporated in the D.C. region. The company was originally registered in Delaware in 2014, but formed in Maryland in April of 2016. Led by NSO Group co-founder Lavi, L-A-V-I-E, Westbridge is vying for federal government contracts for NSO Group's products. Hiring Flynn would provide NSO Group with a well-connected figure in Washington to help get its foot in the door of the notoriously insular world of secret intelligence budgeting. Not only was Flynn working with the NSO Group's OSI Technologies and their Luxembourg subsidiary company. But they were looking to get their foot in the door. And if the Russian hacking threat, quote-unquote, was being hyped up, as Kate Stinson alleged it has been by cybersecurity firms, that would work in the interest of NSO Group and OSY Technologies, associated with key Trump campaign official and, for a time, intelligence advisor Michael Flynn. Continuing with another excerpt. When you're trying to build up your business, you need someone who has connections, someone who is seen as an authority, and a legitimate presence. Hiring someone with Flynn's background in intelligence would open up doors that they wouldn't have had access to, Johnson said. Throughout 2016, Flynn worked for a number of cybersecurity firms personally and through his consulting firm, Flynn Intel Group. In addition to his advisory board seat at OSY Technologies, he sat on the board of Adobe Systems, a large software company with Pentagon contracts, and the boards of the cybersecurity companies Green Zone Systems and Halo Privacy. So again, what role might any of these companies have played in some of the hacking that we have been told took place? This again from the Huffington Post of June 19th. Most of the article will be in the written description for this program. And I also want to note that much of the hacking that took place with regard to, but following spear phishing attacks.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
And one more excerpt from this article. What is clear is that this is the Huffington Post article of June 19th. What is clear is that during the time Flynn was working for NSO's Luxembourg affiliate, and again, OSY Technologies and NSO, part of a secretive Israeli cybersecurity firm that sells advanced hacking tools, cyber espionage tools to foreign governments. What is clear is that during the time Flynn was working for NSO's Luxembourg affiliate, one of the company's main products, a spy software sold exclusively to governments and marketed as a tool for law enforcement officials to monitor suspected criminals and terrorists, was being used to surveil political dissidents, reporters, activists, and government officials. The software called Pegasus allowed users to remotely break into a target's cellular phone if the target responded to a text message. And something that I would point out is that very same technology was used recently, and there is an article in the New York Times about this, from the New York Times of that same day, June 19th of 2017, an article by Azam Ahmed, A-H-M-E-D, and Nicole Perlroth, P-E-R-L-R-O-T-H, using texts as lures, government spyware targets Mexican journalists and their families. And this talks about, since 2011, at least three Mexican federal agencies have purchased about $80 million worth of spyware created by an Israeli cyber arms manufacturer. The software known as Pegasus infiltrates smartphones to monitor every detail of a person's cellular life, calls, text, emails, contacts, and calendars. It can even use the microphone and camera on phones for surveillance, turning a target's smartphone into a personal bug. The company that makes the software, the NSO Group, says it sells the tool exclusively to governments with an explicit agreement that it be only used to battle terrorists or drug cartels and criminals. And apparently in Mexico, that is most assuredly not the case. It has been used for a variety of different purposes. And given that Michael Flynn, working for the Trump campaign, was involved with all sorts of cyber arms and cyber security firms, and in light of all the hacking that went on and the incredibly amateurish nature of that, something that Russia would not do, and I've never seen even in the wildest right-wing new Cold War propaganda the assertion that Vladimir Putin has gone completely insane, because in that highly spun Washington Post article about Obama having called Putin on the special red phone, that is exactly what Putin would have to have done to have authorized these attacks and then continued to do that for any reasonable improvement in American and Russian relations. That would have basically precluded that. Now, keeping in mind that Flynn was working with cybersecurity firms and that at least one of those OSO, or OSY Technologies, NSO OSY, has used spear phishing to conduct cyber espionage, bear in mind that spear phishing was one of the tactics that was used in the alleged Russian attack on American election computers. Bear in mind also that former NSA official said basically any mid-level hacker could have done this, and that the Department of Homeland Security said most of what they were looking at was scanning activity. Guess who released personal details of nearly 200 million, that's 200 million American voters? Russia? The GRU? The FSB? No. The Republican Party. From the Gizmodo blog of June 19th, 2017, an article by Del Cameron, C-A-M-E-R-O-N, and Kate Conger, K-O-N-G-E-R, GOP data firm accidentally leaks personal details of nearly 200 million American voters. Political data gathered on more than 198 million U.S. citizens were exposed this month after a marketing firm contacted by the Republican National Committee stored internal documents on a publicly accessible Amazon server. The data leak contains a wealth of personal information on roughly 61% of the U.S. population, along with home addresses, birth dates, and phone numbers. The records include advanced sentiment analyses used by political groups to predict where individual voters fall on hot-button issues such as gun ownership, stem cell research, and the right to abortion, as well as suspected religious affiliation and ethnicity. The data was amassed from a variety of sources, including American Crossroads, the super PAC co-founded by former White House strategist Karl Rove. And the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, also has involvement with this same database. So roughly 200 million American voters had key personal information compromised in a fundamental way by GOP cyber databases or databasing elements. Might that have had something to do with Mr. Flynn and his involvement with these various cybersecurity firms. Again, no one knows for sure. I would note the following. This from the Wired.com blog, January 16th of 2017, an article by Issy Lapowski, L-A-P-O-W-S-K-Y. Trump's data firm snags RNC tech guru Darren Bolding, B-O-L-D-I-N-G. And this British newcomer's Cambridge Analytica earned serious bragging rights and more than a few enemies as the data firm that helped engineer Donald Trump's victory in the first U.S. presidential election, by the way, using Nazi AI, as we looked at in, for the record, 946. Now, as pushing the Republican National Committee's chief technology officer, Darren Bolding, in a quest to become the analytics outfit of record for the GOP. So what role might the GOP have played in the voter machine hacks? What role might Flynn's firm have played in some of this? Or I shouldn't say firm, that's wrong, but the firms that Flynn was involved with. Again, these are questions that are not being asked. Something, as if you weren't scared enough, and bear in mind that now the U.S. has cyber weapons implanted on key Russian computer networks, and some critical observers have doubted that those could be properly controlled. Note the following from Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter Seymour M. Hersh, H-E-R-S-H. However, Hersh, who used to write for the New York Times, had to publish this with Die Welt in Germany. This from Die Welt of June 25th of 2017, Trump's red line. And what this does is to debunk the notion that not only was there a Syrian sarin weapons attack, but what this maintains, and I'm going to read an excerpt of this, is that what Syria did was to use a precision-guided Russian munition to strike a warehouse where there was a key meeting of Islamist officials. And some of these officials, by the way, were groups that are working as U.S. allies on the ground, in Syria. And in accordance with protocols, the U.S. was warned of this in advance, and there are multiple agencies and individuals in the U.S. intelligence and military command who know this. From Trump's red line from Die Welt of June 25th of 2017. To the dismay of many senior members of his national security team, Trump could not be swayed over the next 48 hours of intense briefings and decision-making. In a series of interviews, I learned of the total disconnect between the president and many of his military advisors and intelligence officials, as well as officers on the ground in the region who had an entirely different understanding of the nature of Syria's attack on Khan Sheikhoun. I was provided with evidence of that disconnect in the form of transcripts of real-time communications immediately following the Syrian attack on April 4th. In an important pre-strike process known as deconfliction, U.S. and Russian officers routinely supply one another with advanced details of planned flight paths and target coordinates to ensure that there is no risk of collision or accidental encounter. The Russians speak on behalf of the Syrian military. This information is supplied daily to the American AWACS surveillance planes that monitor the flights once airborne. Deconfliction's success and importance can be measured by the fact that there has yet to be one collision or even a near miss among the high-powered supersonic American, Allied, Russian, and Syrian fighter bombers. Russian and Syrian Air Force officers gave details of the carefully planned flight path to and from Khan Sheikhoun on April 4th directly in English to the deconfliction monitors aboard the AWACS plane, which was on patrol near the Turkish border, 60 miles or so to the north. The Syrian target at Khan Sheikhoun was shared with the Americans at Doha. Beginning again, the Syrian target at Khan Sheikhoun, as shared with the Americans at Doha, was depicted as a two-story cinder block building in the northern part of town. Russian intelligence, which is shared when necessary with Syria and the U.S. as part of their joint fight against jihadist groups, had established that a high-level meeting of jihadist leaders was to take place in the building, including representatives of Aral al-Sham and the al-Qaeda-affiliated group formerly known as Jabhat al-Nusra. The two groups had recently joined forces and controlled the town and surrounding area. Russian intelligence depicted the cinder block building as a command and control center that housed a grocery and other commercial premises on its ground floor, with other essential shops nearby, including a fabric shop and an electronics store. Quote, "The rebels control the population by controlling the distribution of goods that people need to live, food, water, cooking oil, propane gas, fertilizers for growing their crops, and insecticides to protect the crops," unquote, a senior advisor to the American intelligence community who has served in senior positions in the Defense Department and the CIA told me. The basement was used as storage for rockets, weapons, and ammunition, as well as products that could be distributed for free to the community among the medicines and chlorine-based decontaminants for cleaning the bodies of the dead before burial. The meeting place, a regional headquarters, was on the floor above that. Quote, "It was an established meeting place," the senior advisor said, "a long-time facility that would have had security, weapons, communications, files, and the map center." Unquote. The Russians were intent on confirming their intelligence and deployed a drone for days above the site to monitor communications and develop what is known in the intelligence community as a POL, a pattern of life. The goal was to take note of those going in and out of the building and to track weapons being moved back and forth, including rockets and ammunition. One reason for the Russian message to Washington about the intended target was to ensure that any CIA asset or informant who had managed to work his way into the jihadist leadership was forewarned not to attend the meeting. I was told that the Russians passed the warning directly to the CIA. They were playing the game right, the senior advisor said. The Russian guidance noted that the jihadist meeting was coming at a time of acute pressure for the insurgents. Presumably Jabhat al-Nusra and Aral al-Sham were desperately seeking a path forward in the new political climate. Russian and Syrian intelligence officials, who coordinate operations closely with the American command posts, made it clear that the planned strike on Khan Sheikhoun was special because of the high-value target. Quote, "It was a red-hot change. The mission was out of the ordinary. Scrub the skid," the senior advisor told me. "Every operations officer in the region, in the Army, Marine Corps, Air Force, CIA, and NSA, had to know there was something going on. The Russians gave the Syrian Air Force a guided bomb, and that was a rarity. They're skimpy with their guided bombs and rarely share them with the Syrian Air Force. And the Syrians assigned their best pilot to the mission with the best wingman," unquote. The advance intelligence on the target as supplied by the Russians was given the highest possible score inside the American intelligence community. And the article goes on to note that the secondary explosions from the munitions and some of the chemicals produced some of the apparent chemical pollutants that were noted by a number of observers. And note the following. The crisis slid into the background by the end of April as Russia, Syria, and the U.S. remained focused on annihilating ISIS and the militants of Al-Qaeda. Some of those who had worked through the crisis, however, were left with lingering concerns. Quote, the Salafists and jihadists got everything they wanted out of their hyped-up Syrian nerve gas, ploy, the senior advisor to the U.S. intelligence community told me, referring to the flare-up of tensions between Syria, Russia, and America. Quote, the issue is, what if there's another false flag sarin attack credited to hated Syria? Trump has upped the ante and painted himself into a corner with his decision to bomb. And do not think that these guys are not planning the next fake attack. Trump will have no choice but to bomb again and harder. He's incapable of saying he made a mistake. Indeed. And note that we're conducting strikes on behalf of an Al-Qaeda affiliate. I've spoken about the use of such forces on the ground before. Note the following from the Washington Post of June 26th of 2017 by Abby Phillip and Dan Lamothe, L-A-M-O-T-H-E, from the Washington Post of June 26th of 2017. White House says Syria's Assad preparing another chemical attack warns of heavy penalties. Quote, skipping down, the U.S. has identified potential preparations for another chemical weapons attack by the Assad regime that would likely result in the mass murder of civilians, including innocent children, Sean Spicer said in a statement. These activities are similar to preparations the regime made before its April 4th, 2017 attack. I might have that have been, again, Russia giving the Syrians a precision-guided weapon in advance. That's what happened, according to Seymour Hersh, on April 4th. And yet, that was completely misrepresented by Trump. And, of course, he experienced a boost in the polls when he bombed Syria. So stay tuned. Are we about to see another false flag operation from Al-Qaeda and the related Al-Aram group? Who knows? We shall see. This, by the way, as there have been cyber weapons planted on Russian computer networks in response to Vladimir Putin going apparently insane. You should be really scared. I am. That concludes For the Record program number 964, Lies, Damned Lies, and Statistics. This is being recorded on June 27th of the year 2017. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.